dag, de lytter til Radio Shalom. Radio Shalom sender alt om jødisk kultur, religion og historie, herunder os, Israel. Mit navn er Miriam Schechter, og jeg er jeres vært i dag. Og i studiet har jeg Marcel Julzari til at hjælpe mig med teknikken. Udover israelsk musik, så har vi selvfølgelig to interessante gæster i studiet i dag. Den ene er Hannah Ziadé, som er her i studiet i anledning eller på grund af en kronik, han har skrevet i Politiken under navnet Requiem for Arabiens jøder. Det er hans besøg i Yemen og hos de yemenitiske jøder og de erfaringer, han har høstet der, og hvad han har set, som han vil fortælle i studiet i dag om. Og den anden gæst er den israelske viceambassadør og børnebogsforfatter Dan Orian. Dan Orian vil fortælle om sin virke som diplomat og om sit forfatterskab som børnebogsforfatter. Radio Shalom sender hver dag mellem 18.30 og 20. Hver søndag 16-20 er det på hebraisk, og hver tredje onsdag i en måned er det på jiddisch. Vi genudsender hver lørdag 22-24 og hver søndag mellem 10 og 12. Vi er altid glade for at høre jeres mening om vores udsendelser, og I er velkommen at ringe til os på 35 85 86 11. Jeg gentager 35 85 86 11. I kan finde os på nettet på www.radioshalom.dk, og I kan sende os en mail på info@radioshalom.dk.
הלכו יום אחד בדרך לבאר שבע, הרוח מן הים את השיחים ליטף, ליד אילן זקן היא את ראשה הסבה, וצמתה ירדה ירוד מן הכתף. הגדוד המשיך לצעוד, ועם הגדוד הלכו, ואת פניו נשקו גם רוח גם חמה. אבל בחניה לילית אחת נוכחנו איש אחת לשאול אותה לשמע. לא ידע את שמה, אבל אותה צמא, הלכה עמו לאורך כל הדרך, והוא ידע יש יום בו ייפגשו פתאום עם שחר של טללים או שמש ערך. הקיץ השני החליף גוונים וצבע, פטרול סיור חזר מלילה של סיוון, ניהר האמבולנס בדרך לבאר שבע. והיא חיכתה, חיכתה לו בחלוק לבן, והוא שאל האם, והיא אמרה זוכרת, וכה דיברו שעות איש לא ידע על מה וכשהלך בלי שום והיא נותרה חילרת זכרה היא שכח לשאול אותה לשמע לא ידע את שמע אבל אותה צמא הלכה עמו לאורך כל הדרך והוא ידע יש יום בו ייפגשו פתאום עם שחר של טללים או שמש
שרד לים רוח רוח קיים מי חולם חולם עלייך במשלט משלט הארון שני אורות בליל 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 רומזים רומזים פתאום עץ בודד בודד ינום מי הולך הולך אלייך עם ערוב ערוב היום שני אורות בליל 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 בלי רומזים רומזים פתאום בוקר בוקר את יאור ואשוב אשוב מלחום האמצע אמצע אדם זכר זכר לחלום שני עוד בליל 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 רומזים רומזים פתאום מה אומרות עינייך 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 לי לומר עד תום עד תום לי לומר עד תום עד תום
Hanna Siade, velkommen til Radio Shaloms studie.
Tak.
Jeg er meget glad for at have dig i studiet her i dag. Og anledningen og baggrund for, at jeg ønskede dig i studiet, det var din kronik i Politikken, som kom den 28. februar i år, og som hedder Requiem for Arabiens jøder. Mm. Og der redegør, der fortæller du om dit besøg i Yemen, og din oplevelse med den jødiske samfund, som består af ganske få jøder efterhånden, tilbage i Yemen. Og du fortæller om den undertrykkelse, de er udsat for. Din artikel har gjort meget stor indtryk på mig. Den har givet mig for det første viden og informationer, som jeg ikke havde kendskab til. Og den har vist mig, at du er et menneske med et pluralistisk syn på tilværelsen. Jeg blev meget betaget af den måde, du har skrevet det på. Dels redegør du for jødernes situation i Yemen, men du kommer i slutningen af din kronik også ind på et polemik, som jeg vil meget gerne have med i vores interview i dag. Og derfor så var det meget vigtigt for mig, at andre og mange lyttede til din historie og din beretning, for den er vigtigt.
Jamen, tak skal du have. Jeg er også meget, meget, meget glad for, at nogen tog os den her kronik op, fordi der er behov for, at nogen gør noget.
Så velkommen igen.
Tak.
Du har været der, men først, hvad er din baggrund?
Ja, altså jeg er jo født og vokset op i Libanon. Det er snart 44 år siden. Og min far er født og vokset op i Jerusalem og flygtet til Jordan og derfra til Libanon. Og jeg kom til Danmark i 86, også som flytning, så jeg er sådan set anden generations flytning.
Yeah.
Ikke anden generations indvandrer. Og jeg var i Yemen, fordi jeg arbejdede med Dansk Institut for Menneskerettigheder og var udstationeret der. Danmark har et program, hvor vi skal støtte om menneskerettigheder i Yemen. Og der mødte jeg så, jeg rejste meget i landet, og der mødte jeg den sidste jødisk menighed, eller lille samfund, i en by uden for Sanaa, der hedder...
Inden du kommer ind på det, så synes jeg, det er vigtigt, at lytterne forstår, hvorfor du har så stor en interesse for netop menneskerettighedsproblematikken. Du har en akademisk baggrund.
Ja, jeg skriver jo også på en PhD om menneskerettigheder i Mellemøsten.
Du er magister i arabisk.
Jeg har også kendt med i arabisk og arabisk studie, samfundsfaglig studie og i fransk litteratur fra Københavns Universitet, og skriver jeg nu på en PhD på Roskilde Universitet om menneskerettigheder i Mellemøsten. Men min interesse i det er jo, altså mit arbejde for institut behøvede ikke at handle om jøderne i Yemen. Selvfølgelig skulle det også handle om
det. Var det så helt tilfældigt, du kom
forbi? Det var personligt, fordi jeg har altid interesseret mig for mangfoldighed. Jeg har arbejdet jo igen i mange år, og her i Danmark med mangfoldighedsledelse og med ligestilling, og hvor jeg altid bare de der store flag og sagde, at det er vigtigt, at vi har indvandrere og muslimer og araber, fordi det giver et samfund en mangfoldighed. Så, og jeg har en interesse for gammel kultur. Og så selvfølgelig, når man er i Yemen, så har man, hvis man er dannet, så har man jo hørt om, at det har været en gammel jødisk kultur der. Og der, ligesom jeg har opsøgt ismaeliterne og alle mulige andre sådan historiske kuriositeter, så ville jeg meget gerne lære noget om jøderne i Yemen. Og så kom jeg på besøg hos dem, og det var ikke let, fordi det var forbudt. Altså, man skulle have særlig tilladelse. Og jeg smuglede mig til Raida for halvandet år siden og mødte med dem. Og så, hvor stor en samhørighed der er mellem dem og de arabisk-muslimske kulturer, som de er en del af. Og samtidig, den anden side af det, hvor altså ghettoficeret det bliver, eller hvor uskilt de er, fordi de jøder. Altså, jeg kan huske, da jeg kom i en bil, og så skulle vi lede efter de her jøder, og min bilchauffør var en sunni muslim. Og han kunne ikke forstå, hvorfor jeg og en veninde ville absolut møde de her snavsede, urene folkeslag. Men det vil jeg. Og så spurgte vi nogle af de indfødte der, hvor der er en jødisk hjem, fordi så mange er der jo heller ikke i den by. De bliver jo drevet fra små landsbyer og blev givet ly i de der by for nogle generationer siden, men under beskyttelse af nogle bestemte stammer. Altså alt i Yemen er beskyttet af nogle stammer, ikke? Så de er gæster i deres egen hjemland for nogle bestemte stærke stammer. Og så kom jeg et bestemt sted, som så viste mig et andet sted, hvor deres unge rabbiner boede. Og så kom jeg der, og de sad, mændene for sig, og kvinderne for sig, og hvor mændene sad og tykkede kat. Det er en bestemt euforiserende blade plante, som alle jemenitterne tykker. Og der sad jeg der, og der var nogle muslimer, også arabiske jemenitter til stede, og hvor jeg så spurgte dem, hvordan de levede osv. Og jeg kunne konstatere, at de faktisk var jemenitter i alle hensyn, undtagen de religiøse, ikke? Og de der krøller, de bærer obligatoriske krøller, og de fortalte mig blandt andet, at de kan gifte sig med flere kvinder, at de skriver faktisk nogle steder på arabisk, Allah, altså Yahweh bliver til Allah, og så videre. Man kan tydeligt se, at de prøvede så meget som muligt at sådan underordne sig den jemenitiske kultur, som de er en del af. Og så, vi talte længe, og der var fint atmosfære, og så kommer jeg tilbage her i december 2008 på en delegation, og der møder jeg en helt anden stemning. Der er sket en stor ændring. De havde talt meget stille dengang under første besøg om nogle bestemte chikaner osv. Men her møder jeg en af deres rabbiner, en der hedder Yahya Yaish, som så fortæller mig, at de har været udsat for systematisk chikane i de sidste år, og at de er bange for deres liv, og at nogen har troet deres, med at krænke deres ære, altså at krænke deres kvinder. Og der igen kan man sige, hvor tit de ligger på den arabisk muslimske kultur, fordi at krænke menneskers eller kvindernes ære, det er det værste, der kan ske i en familie, ikke? Eller en gruppe. Og jeg må indrømme, at jeg ikke troede på ham, fordi som en, der arbejder med menneskerettigheder i Mellemøsten, kan man høre nogle overdrivelser, så tænkte jeg, at der er nogle konflikter med nogle familier om nogle jord og så videre. Og så nogle dage efter, så hører jeg, eller læser i aviserne, at en af de yder, han omtalt som værende udsat for chikane, har blivet skudt ned på åben gade af en soldat, altså faktisk flyvåbenpilot. Som så senere han i byretten, da han skulle forklare, hvorfor han gjorde det her, så siger han, at han havde advaret de her jøder om, at de skal simpelthen enten blive muslimer, eller flygte fra landet, eller også slår han dem ihjel. Og han fortrudt ikke sin handling, og det konsekvensen af hans handlinger var jo, at i stedet for, at staten kommer ind og prøver og straffe ham selvfølgelig, men også statuere et eksempel, at de her jøder er jemenitiske borgere, de har ret til at bo der, og ingen skal bortdrive dem fra, hvor de er. Så inviterede præsidenten dem til at komme under sin egen privat beskyttelse i Sanaa, som er, selvom på overfladen kan virke meget sådan
ridderligt,
ja, og ridderligt, at her har du en præsident, som
tager sig af
sine jøder, endda en arabisk præsident, der gør det. Så synes jeg, der var vigtigt at vise, at det ikke, at man ikke skal lade sig tro, at præsident Saleh gør noget godt, fordi han har gjort det samme med andre slags andre grupper af jøder, som boede i en lille provins, eller en provinsby, der hedder Sada, som var også udsat for chikane og forfølgelse af en militær shia-gruppe, som udviste dem derfra. Og igen så gav præsidenten dem ly i en lille indhegnet sådan boligkvarter, der hedder turistbyen. Jeg synes, det er forfærdeligt at placere jøder i turistby, som om de var menneskedyr arter, der skal indhegnes et sted. Og jeg kunne for eksempel ikke besøge dem der. Man skulle have en særlig tilladelse fra Indrigsministeriet. Og de blev færre og færre, fik jeg jo vide. De var flere hundrede, da de flygtede i 2005, og nu er der 40-50 tilbage. Og det er tydeligt, at det er simpelthen forhalen til Sanas lufthavn, hvor så jøderne kommer ud af landet. Og jeg synes, det var en trist og uværdig slut på en gammel og smuk sådan mangfoldig givende tilstedeværelse af jøderne på den arabiske halvø. Altså med at jøderne bliver tvunget ud af Yemen, så har du altså ikke nogen andre sekter eller religiøse retninger på den arabiske halvø er muslimer, som er indfødte. Selvfølgelig har det jo alle mulige, der arbejder som slaver, eller som tjeneste piger, eller som importerede arbejdskraft.
Men ikke som borgere,
ikke som borgere, ikke som indfødte. Og det, der gør det endnu værre, det er jo, at jøderne i Yemen faktisk er oprindelige folk. Altså selvfølgelig alle jemenitter er oprindelige. De er konverteret fra alle mulige andre, fra panteistiske, jødiske og kristne religiøse retninger til islam. Men det er jo en indfødt, altså det er den ældste og mest indfødt trosretning på den arabiske halvø. Og det skal ikke være dem, der skal forsvinde totalt. Men det gør de.
Der er også den der økonomiske vinkel på hele den forfølgelse, som jeg nævnte for dig, minder mig om Europa under nazitiden.
Ja.
Europa i 20'erne og 30'erne, hvor man fordrev jøderne for at få fat, simpelthen ren og skær på alle de ejendom, de måske havde, eller jorden, de havde, eller penge, de havde. Altså simpelthen et forløb, hvor det var helt tydeligt, en ting, vi skal have deres ejendom.
Selvfølgelig. Det var vigtigt for mig at vise, at der ikke var bare de der store slåede, altså de er forkert og rabiat i vores sind, men de står jo i angrebenes sind som værende stort. De forsvarer islam, de er ved at bekrige jøder, som er islams fjende. Men altså, jeg kunne se, at der lå andre banale lave hensyn bag angrebet på jøderne, og det er faktisk, at de vil gerne arve deres besiddelser. Altså, de har jo, mange jøder har jo simpelthen flygtet fra landet og efterlod nogle ejendele til deres egen familiemedlemmer, som så de her mennesker vil gerne få fat i på en eller anden måde. Ikke?
Men også nogle af de jøder, som er udvandret til Israel, har efterladt ejendomme og jord, som de jøder, der borgerne nu i Yemen, har overtaget på deres vegne,
præcis,
kan man sige.
Præcis, altså, at de flere hundrede jøder nu er rigtig sagt rigere end deres naboer i kraft af, at de har simpelthen blevet arvtager af hele den jødiske befolknings og da er de, altså det er vigtigt at sige, at de ikke er så rige, altså de er bare lidt rigere end en gennemsnit. Og man har det altid med minoriteter, at altså man kan godt forstå, at der er en mærsk, der er millionær, men man kan ikke forstå, at en indvandrernabo har en BMW. Altså, kan du sige, fordi, ja, altså, Mærsk, der er jo milliardærer, ikke? Altså, det er den forståelse af ting, som gør, at har gjort historisk, at mange jøder bliver set, eller jøderne generelt bliver set som rigere end de andre. Fordi man fokuserer på nogle bestemte jøder, som er rige, og så siger man, at jøderne er rige, og så glemmer man alle mulige andre mindre rige jøder. Og i Yemen er jøderne, der er lige så fattige, som har været lige så fattige som deres nabo, hvis ikke fattigere faktisk.
Det, som jeg også vil sidde og tænke på, hvor stor er bevidstheden i Yemen om den jødiske kulturarv. Altså nu ved vi, at det jødiske sylsmad har været fantastiske, og det, de har efterladt sig af kunsthåndværk på højeste internationale plan. Det er sjældenheder at se så fantastisk sølvsmedie arbejde. Hvor meget er man bevidst om det kulturarv, der bliver tabt, ved at man ikke har mere af disse håndværkere i blandt sig?
Desværre er det sådan, at jeg boede i Gamle Sanaa by. Det er en smuk virkelig middelalder. Det kaldes ørkenens Venedig, fordi de ser de så smuk arkitektur. Og jeg boede i nærheden af bazaren, souken, og jeg samlede lidt på antikviteter. Og de eksperter der ved, at jødisk sølvsmed er noget af det bedste. Men der er jo ikke den brede forståelse for selv jemenisk kultur, fordi det er jo en kultur, det er et samfund i krise. Nu køber alle bare guld, det der skinner, og de er gået væk fra de gamle traditionelle smykker, som sølvsmed er, som viser mere personlighed, synes jeg. Men det er jo det er en trick, som alle bazarfolk kender. Det er jo, at de altid prøver at sælge der en gulds eller en sølvsmed som Værnebo Sani, altså lavet af nogle jøder, som boede et bestemt sted i Sanaa. Men altså der, og den det kendskab til jødiske bidrag til jemenisk kultur er endnu mindre på museer og andre steder, fordi det er ikke noget man absolut vil prale af, ikke? Og det synes jeg er også en skam.
Ja. Jeg vil meget gerne drøfte lidt med dig også det du kommer ind på om den tavshed der er i den arabiske verden, i den verden i hvert fald, om både de jøder som flygtede i 48 fra de arabiske lande, de irakiske jøder, som mange af dem har været højplacerede og også meget velhavende, de syriske jøder, de egyptiske, de libanesiske jøder, det er ligesom et tabuemne, eller også er der noget, man mindsker vigtigheden af, man taler ikke om det. Der er heller ikke nogen intellektuelle, du kommer ind på det selv, der er ikke nogen intellektuelle inden i den arabiske verden, så tager det op som problematik. Du tør godt, jeg synes, det er meget modigt af dig, det er meget flot, at du gør det, jeg beundrer dig meget for det. Vil du ikke selv komme lidt ind på,
jeg synes, at den vigtigste ærne, eller der er to vigtige ærne for mig, da jeg skrev den kronik. Den anden var udtryk solidaritet med de jøder, der er der. Helst vil jeg have udtrykt det på arabisk over for andre araber, fordi det er vigtigt for os at fastholde, at der er en menneskelighed og mennesker bag i hver eneste gruppe, uanset hvordan man deler grupperne er. Og at jeg som araber ikke beliger, at der er nogen andre araber og muslimer, der forfølger den minigruppe, der er tilbage i jøderne, og at jeg begræder, at det er derfor, jeg kaldte det et requiem, at jeg begræder, at den kultur er ved udånde. Det synes jeg er en stor tab for ikke kun araber, ikke kun for jøder faktisk, for at sige det lige ud, men også for jemeniterne og for araber, for den sags skyld for hele verden. Jeg synes, det skal vi. Det er en skam, at der ikke er andre end os to i en lille bitte radiostid som det her, der synes det. Men sådan er verden skabt, desværre. Og det andet, det var jo at gøre status og kritisere, at araberne og arabisk intellektuelle, som jeg mener har været alt for stille i forhold til en proces, altså den her, at der er 200 eller 400 jøder, som bliver smidt ud af Yemen, det er jo en proces, der varede 50 år. Mange jøder forlod frivilligt deres hjemlande efter Israels oprejse, lige før Israels oprejse, fordi de ville gerne bygge en jødisk stat. Det forstår jeg godt. Sådan er det. Jeg synes, det har været en meget kostbar national opbygningsproces, især som palæstinenser, fordi det var jo min forfædres hjemland, som blev taget, og mine forfædre, der blev bortdrevet for, at man skulle bygge det her hjemland. Og det er derfor, vi har den her 50-60-årige konflikt, som koster mange liv på begge sider. Men der er andre jøder, der blev faktisk bortdrevet fra araber som konsekvens, eller som gengældelsesaktion på, at israelere og sionister har faktisk bortdrevet araber og muslimer fra Palæstina.
Jo, vi taler faktisk om cirka 1 million jøder fra de forskellige arabiske lande, som blev fordrevet, fordi de fik jo ikke chancen for at blive eller tage. De fik bare besked på at forlade og efterlade alt bag sig.
Ja, men altså desværre, bare det var så grotesk, som det kan forstås, det du siger. Det skete i det skjule og lidt efter lidt, men der var næsten 1 million jøder i 48, eller lige omkring 1948, da Israel blev oprettet. Der er kun 6.500 jøder tilbage blandt 280 millioner araber.
Yeah.
Og jeg gjorde den punkt, altså der er en slags, der tilbage af min forfædres befolkningsgruppe, er der i Israel over næsten 1 million. Og vi siger, at der har været en etnisk udrensning og systematisk bortdrivelse af araber i det lille Palæstina, som er måske 60.000 kvadratmeter eller noget i den retning. Og jeg synes, det er kritisabelt, og jeg synes, det er fordomsfuldt, og jeg synes, det er en crime against humanity, you name it, jeg vil fordømme det. Men jeg synes, vi har en anden side af historie, og det er, at der har været cirka 1 million jøde, blandt mange, mange flere araber, og som har været så udsat for systematisk, men langstrakt bortdrivelse. Og jeg synes, vi skal både fordømme det ene, som skete i 1948, eller 47, 48, 49, overfor palæstinensisk flytning, men vi skal også fordømme det, der er sket fra 1948 og 40, der, for den sags skyld, og den forfølgelse af jøder, og den ydmygelse af jøder, der er sket i, fra muslimske araber overfor deres arabiske jødiske medfælder, og som fortsat, og som er ufordømt. Altså, vi alle ved noget om palæstinenserne, og deres krav til ret og flytøren, og vi har internationale resolutioner om det, og jeg synes, de skal fastholdes. Og jeg synes, der er enorm lidelse bag de her historier. Jeg ved det selv, min far er jo flytning. Men jeg synes, det er forfærdeligt, at vi mennesker kun vil gerne tale om vores egen lidelse, fordi vi mærker smerten. Det er vigtigt også at mærke de andre smerter. Det synes jeg, det er den forskel mellem mennesker og dyr. Det er, at dyr, vi er i stand ikke kun til at påføre andre smerter, men vi er også i stand til at føle de her smerte. Og jeg synes, der er en smerte at føle for, især for eksempel, jeg mødte irakiske jøder, som har været ramt af at blive bortdrevet fra deres elskede Irak. De elskede det så højt, og de kunne ikke forestille sig andet end at være irakere. Med jødisk baggrund. Mange af dem var faktisk sekulære jøder, ligesom mange af de jøder, som Nazi-Tyskland har forfulgt, de var jo ikke jøder i en navn, altså på den måde, at deres forfædre var jøder. Og de måtte forlade alt. Mange af dem, som du selv fortalte mig under før interviewet, var højstående jøder, ministerposter og havde penge. Men mange af dem har tabt det vigtigste i deres liv, og det er faktisk deres hjemland, deres hjemstavn, det sprog, som de talte, deres synagog, deres altså fædrelandet, det er et stort tab. Det er det, som palæstinenserne hele tiden taler om. Det er, og det er det, som mange jøder har tabt, både før Israels oprettelse og efter Israels oprettelse. Og det, de har måske tilbage, det er jo et hjemland, som er truet og som er omringet. Og det er den her miserable tragiske
historie. Vi taler om en konflikt, som er afhængig af de øjne, der sagde på det, meget problematisk, fordi den indeholder nogle menneskelige konflikter, nogle religiøse, kulturelle, og som er, altså, hvor det er svært at se, hvordan det ender med noget harmonisk for alle parter. For nogle gange så forekommer det at være meget modsætningsfyldt, og nogle gange så håber man på, at det alligevel vil kunne løse sig.
Yeah.
Men jeg vil, når vi nu taler om det ene blinde øje, som jeg vil kalde, fra begge sider om hvad der er foregået, så må jeg som en, der har boet nu i Danmark i mange, mange år, også en, der er kommet udefra, sige, men hvis vi har nogle eksempler i den muslimske verden, hvor man ikke tolererer engang en befolkning, og det er lige meget, om det er jøder eller kristne eller andre, men bare nogen, der ikke er muslimer, og de er kun 400 mennesker, som i Yemen, ud af en befolkning på 22 millioner, hvis det er et samfund, hvis det er en religion, for nogle gange har vi jo svært ved at adskille, hvor er det, hvor grænsen går mellem religionen og samfundet og kulturen. Hvis det er en kultur eller et samfund på 22 millioner, der ikke kan tolerere 400 af andet tankegang og anden måde at være på, jamen er der overhovedet plads til at tro på, at der nogensinde vil være samme eksistens mellem kristne og muslimer, mellem jøder og muslimer. Det er også det, din kronik viser meget tydeligt, og som kan være et skræmmebillede, men det er godt, at du påpeger det. Vi må tale om disse ting.
Ja, præcis, men jeg håber, at min røst som araber viser, at der er jo nogen blandt araberne, som er lige, altså de er ikke så mange, som gerne vil tale om samme eksistens, og som gerne vil tale om en åbenhed overfor det andet, men jeg synes, det er rigtig trange vilkår, som vi har i øjeblikket. Altså fra Irak til Pakistan, til Egypten, til Yemen. Altså det er det arabisk-muslimske, den arabisk-muslimske verden er i en dyb krise. Og den dyb krise gør, at vi har en systematisk, der er en systematisk religiøs og etnisk udrensning på den måde, at for første gang i historien har vi i den østlige del af sydlige del og østlige del af Middelhavet kun rendyrket enklaver. Du har Israel med nogle jøder, du har Libanon med nogle kristne, og så har du bare muslimer over. Og så det er derfor nu, og det viser jo, at bare det giver fred, hvis man mener, at ved at lave det her rendyrkede enklaver, du kan få fred, så har du nu shia mod sunnier, og snart vil du få nogle måske med ismailiterne, eller hvad ved jeg. Altså, det går jo ikke. Altså, det er vigtigt at forstå, at den, der begynder at bekrige dig, fordi du er af den ene farve eller den anden, vil finde noget andet at bekrige dig, altså bekrige andre overfor noget. Og det er den tradition, som jeg synes, man skal bryde op med. Altså, først forfølger du jøderne, fordi de har taget Palæstina, men bagefter begynder du at begå virkelig store massakre mod shiiterne, og de er jo allers muslimer, ligesom dig, og så videre, og man har faktisk fælles blodlinjer, og så videre. De er næsten en familie med hinanden. Så det, hvis du virkelig kan få folk til at tro på det forfærdelige, at du kan slå et menneske, fordi han bier på en bestemt måde, så kan du få dem til at gøre nogle værre over for andre grupper. Ikke? Og det er derfor, det er vigtigt, at man holder en princip fast holdning og sige, uanset hvor små eller store de der forbrydelser, altså 200 eller 400 jøder, der bliver forfulgt i Yemen, det skulle ikke være de store. Altså der bliver 1 million palæstinenser bumpet i Gaza, siger folk til mig. Jeg siger, jeg forstår det godt, men man skal fordømme både det og det andet. Og jeg synes, for mig som araber, er der mere kredit for mig at sige, at jeg synes, det er fordumsfuldt, at 400 jøder i Yemen bliver udsat for det her. Og jeg synes, det er endnu mere fordumsfuldt, at 1 million jøder bliver etnisk udrenset gennem årtier fra den arabiske verden, uden at nogen lægger mærke til det eller fordømmer det.
Der er ingen, der har fordømt det indtil nu. Ja, der har ikke været nogen som helst rigtig sådan public awareness på international plan omkring det.
Måske det hænger også sammen med, at mange er bange for, at de laver en PR-stand for Israel. Ikke? Men jeg synes, dem, der laver public relations stands for Israel, er de mennesker, der forfølger jøderne i den arabiske verden. Når du forfølger jøder i den arabiske verden, så gør du altså det zionistiske projekt mere legitim, fordi det er det, de stod på. Den stod jo på at sige, at jøderne har været forfulgt alle steder af alle. Og jeg synes, det er en forenkling af den jødiske historie. Og jeg håber ikke, at det er rigtigt, fordi det viser, hvor forfærdelig menneskelighed er, at der altid var nogen, der ville forfølge den her gruppe, og det synes jeg ikke, at det er rigtigt. Og det er det, som araberne har så været medvirkende til. Altså, de har medvirket til at legitimisere det israelske statsprojekt. Ikke? Og det ville de ikke engang indrømme. Og det andet, det var jo selvfølgelig, at de har udsat en stor del af deres egen medborgere til en skæbne i landsflygtighed, og nogle af dem er blevet slået ihjel, altså i Irak var der jo en headhunt på jøderne, som blev stemplet som spioner og blev hængt på åbent tår og så videre. Ja.
Jeg vil nemlig lige slutte af med, fordi nu kommer vi til afslutning på vores interview, med to ord, du har brugt i din kronik til slut, som jeg vil bare nævne og håbe på, at vores interview her i dag måske kunne begynde sin til at løse det, som du kalder tavshedens skam. Og uanset om vi taler om jøder eller andre minoriteter, så mener jeg generelt, ligesom du, og jeg er så glad for, at du bringer det op, under alle omstændigheder, enhver overgreb på mennesker, hvor menneskerettighederne bliver overset, det er tavshedens skam. Og derfor er jeg så glad for, at du ville komme til vores studie. Og tusind tak, og det var mig en stor fornøjelse.
Tak.
Og en stor ære. Tak skal du have.
Tak for dig og for Shalom Radio.
Tak skal du have. Det var fantastisk godt.
Tak.
Og jeg...
Mani ose po biladai. אין לי כלום מלבד האהבה כל הערב מחייג אלייך את לא עונה הסתגרתי לי לבד בחדר ומשוגע הולך מפה לשם החיים איבדו כיוון בסדר, אין לי עניין. אלוהים, 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 לא יודע לאן. אלוהים, 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 אם תיתן לי קצת זמן. האורות קביב בחלונות, אנשים חולמים על המחר, לא יכול לישון, רוצה לדקור, עצוב לי וכך. פתאום צלצול ואת בדלת, התנצל אומרת, מתנצל, את אהובתי ואין אחרת, די לערפל. אלוהי, אלוהי, אלוהים, לא יודע אלוהי, אלוהי, אלוהי,
Welcome, Dan Orian, to Radio Shalom. Dan Orian, you are the Vice Ambassador of the State of Israel in Denmark. Mm-hmm. And it's an honor and it's a pleasure, and I'm very glad that you are in our studio here today.
I'm happy to be with you today.
The reason that we think it's important that you are our guest today is your work at the embassy, of course, but mainly today is it your the profession that you also have as a writer. You are a writer of children's books, and one is already published in Hebrew, and the next one is already on its way. But before we talk about you being a writer, I would like very much to just talk a little bit about the background of your being the Vice Ambassador here today. Mm-hmm. You have served 5 years as the cultural attaché in Moscow of the Israeli embassy there. Now, an ambassador or a diplomatic work at an embassy, how does it how does it involve you within the culture? Please tell me, what are you doing?
Well, first of all, I'm happy to be here in the Jewish Radio of Copenhagen. It is, if you're asking me about the job of culture attaché, or in general about the special job of culture in our work, then there's a lot to tell about it. First of all, I would start by saying that in Moscow, I was dealing only with culture, or mostly with culture, as I was the culture attaché of the embassy. A culture attaché of an embassy works in order to strengthen the relations between Israelis and Danes. If you're here, Israelis and Russians, if you're there. A special emphasis is on the institutions. That means to see that the leading heads of festivals from Denmark here, in the past from Russia, will get to Israel, to the relevant events. That important artists, that relevant writers, that relevant poets, that good exhibitions from Israel will get a lot of attention here. First of all, that they will get here, but then that they will get the attention that people from the press will be coming to Israel to tell about the culture of Israel, and not only about the conflict. And, of course, I'd be more than happy to tell you in each one of the fields of the culture how it is done. Part of my job before that was head of the literature department in the ministry, where I had also the
Ministry of Foreign Affairs.
Of Foreign Affairs in Israel, where I had the pleasure also of working with Arthur Avnon, which is now the ambassador here. He was the head of the structure pushing the Israeli culture abroad, and I was dealing with specifically with literature.
This is exactly the theme of what I wanted actually to talk with you about, which is pushing or getting the public around the world, and especially now here in Denmark for you, is that Israeli culture is very, very rich. It's dynamic, it's rich, and it's on an international level in many fields, like literature and dance and movie and theater. There are so many fields. How important is it to show this variety of Israeli culture?
Well, there's no doubt in my mind, but I think this is a general understanding, both in the ministry and in Israel in general, that selling Israel, as we call it, beyond the conflict, is a very important task. The ministry has a lot of money invested in trying to promote Israeli arts, but also many other moments which are not exactly art. That means if we're talking about research in biology, if we know that we have specialists like Dr. Cheval that received a very important prize last week here in Copenhagen in the research in a biological research, it means that if we had last week a group of youngsters from Iskav participating in the Lego Big Championship that was here about robotics and Lego, coming here from Israel and performing very well during that. We were part of that too. But it means that in every part, in every place and everything that we can contribute, we try to do that in order to have as much as possible both Israeli culture, science and technologies shown here. To put Israel in the right place, and when you look at what came out from our country, and I'm not just talking about, you know, the instrument in order to take hair from your legs, and the little cherry tomatoes, which are also Israeli invention, and I'm not just talking about so many things that have to do with our computers today that come out from the
and the mobile phones
and some of the mobile phones technologies and so many many other things, including in medicine, things like the given images. That's a special small little capsule that you swallow, and it functions instead of taking an operation to see what is happening inside you. But of course, my job was mainly on what we call hardcore culture, and my dealing for 3 years was with writers and poets in Israel, and big events like a film, book festivals, but also book fairs, trying to get the leading Israeli writers to the right places, helping them when a book was published abroad to get a lot of attention, make the right connections for them when I can, and get from them some connections in order to push others forward. So this was the main task. And if you just think about the wonderful gallery we have, starting from Amos Oz, whose book Story of Love and Darkness was published here, and I heard from Mr. Ries, the head of the Guldendale, that it's one of the surprising bestsellers, because, you know, it's a huge book, and it's it has sold more than 15,000 copies, and I'm talking to you about a big, you know, very thick masterpiece. But it's not only Amos Oz. Still, if we mention Guldendale, it's Edgar Keret. His book Ode Presenta Igenting was published here about 2 years ago, and it's soon Duel of David Grossman will be published here in one of the publishing houses, and many more to come, hopefully. And a lot of the work that is done here is to get the publishers here aware that there's a wonderful writer called Lizzie Doron, who writes about second generation, about the experiences of people who came out from the Holocaust. It's to get them to see Meir Shalev's the Luz Nechama. It's a wonderful short story for kids about a lice that is traveling between heads and visiting ministers and heads of state from their head, but to get the taste of Israel literature, and then to tell them that a person like Sami Michael, a very famous Israeli writer, will be coming here in June for a short visit, and tell them about what he's bringing with him, and send this information to the journalists. And it's a lot of work. It's a lot of what we call a black, as we call it, you know, a lot of technical work. But at the end, one of the best results is when you see, first of all, an Israeli a book coming out here or in other places, like it happened a lot in Russia. And also when you see these magnificent materials about these writers, if just yesterday Sonson had an interview with Amos Oz in Christi Darblatt, and everybody can see, or if Michael Rack-Hengigson in Israel, I think, met half of the leading Israeli writers and wrote about it. But these are just a few examples. There are so many. I will not, of course, elaborate on all of them. There's no question that showing the depth of our culture is much more than just talking about literature or about poetry, which are two very important pillars, but not everything. Just lately, we had the Film Festival of Copenhagen. Four Israeli films were participating there. I'm not talking about Vals with Bashir, that both won the European one of the European leading prizes, but was also shown in on a daily basis here. And I think I haven't seen any paper who did not have a good review on that. And we have many, many. This is, you know, again, just a few. But it's also to see that the Israeli movies on specific topics, if there's a Jewish film festival, to make sure that they know of the new things coming out there, and to get it to them, and to help them get the films from Israel. And the same way to do with the homosexual film festival, which we want to have to show different styles of life in Israel. Israel is such a pluralistic country with such a vast right. possibilities that it's important to give other mm-hmm. tastes as well.
Mm-hmm. I will not let you go on before you really also mentioned that Israel is one of the leading countries within the modern dance.
Yes.
Which is popular here in Denmark.
Mm-hmm. Modern dance is certainly one of the places where the Israeli achievements are really well known all over the world. Leading troops like Bat Sheva has been traveling the world, has been one of the leading, every year they're both in New York and quite often also in Washington, and you see them in all the big palaces, and they were here more than once with the great success. Ohad Naharin is working very much with the Danish partners. He has been working with the dancers here. They are coming to us, to Israel. We have a special center in Israel, which every year has a special program called Opening the Curtain, where leading festival organizers and troop organizers are coming to Israel to see the new moments of the coming year, or the new special, the new special dancers created, mm-hmm. and the new names. Mm-hmm. And out of that, quite often, we get a lot of invitations. Mm-hmm. For sending them abroad. And of course, the ministry from time to time is also helping them with tickets or with other support. But at the end of the day, there's no question that the best name Israel has comes out from the culture. So we spoke a bit about films, we spoke a bit about the dance, but Israel theater is a wonderful thing. We have theater, the Gesher Theater, we have a Bima Theater, we have a Kameri. All of them
and are a very interesting experience theater, mm-hmm. which is a kind of laboratory,
exactly.
Lessons, mm-hmm. Beit Lessing, which is fantastic laboratory for the Kameri.
Exactly. Beit Lessing, you mentioned that there's also experimental and theater that combines audiovisual with the young actors. You just name it, and in mm-hmm. culture we have it. And I think that one of the most important thing that should be said, that you have all the variety of the Israeli society shown in the Israeli culture. It's if we talk about, you know, the different groups of people and in different communities, so you can read with in Eli Amir's works, for example, yeah. about the Moroccans, and you mm-hmm. can read about the different behaviors and the different mm-hmm. cultures and the different traditions mm-hmm. among different groups. If this is just one example, if you read one of the other leading authors, Sobol, he talks a lot about
Sobol.
Exactly, mm-hmm. Yoshua Sobol. He speaks a lot about the, as we call them, the survivors. Mm-hmm. If you go into one of the new generation, someone like Edgar Keret, and you get a very, very different group of people mm-hmm. to see. He's, by the way, mm-hmm. with his wife, mm-hmm. not just written a children's wonderful mm-hmm. book, but also made a wonderful film called Medusas, which was mm-hmm. Shown, Jellyfish, mm-hmm. was shown both in Cannes, but also here in Copenhagen.
Yes.
So basically you can see a huge variety mm-hmm. Of tastes and of possibilities mm-hmm. in this respect.
And I can, within the film, even mention Asi Dayan, which has made a series of film about a psycholog session, which has become a world success.
It was, yes, it is. And actually, there are a few other names we haven't mentioned until now, and not just in the films, but the music scene in Israel is unbelievably
the Philharmonic
huge. And the Philharmonic was here with
yeah.
Zubin Mehta,
right.
And they are coming again next year, so I'm sure we'll talk about that a lot. But it's not just them. Just soon to come here is the quartet called the Aviv Quartet, mm-hmm. a wonderful quartet. In June, they will be in one of the little festivals here in Copenhagen. And except for that, we are expecting a wonderful pianist planned to come here later this year. Last year, he participated in the international contest for pianists mm-hmm. here. Mm-hmm. And then afterwards, maybe just a few days ago, as we all know, Birnbaum, one of the leading Israeli both conductor and a player, was here receiving a very high award,
the Sonic Prize,
right. Here in Copenhagen. Mm-hmm. And as I'm saying, this is just a tip. Well, just a little bit of what is happening and what will happen.
Well, I'm no doubt personally that this is the best way you can, or the State of Israel can not only promote but receive goodwill. Mm-hmm. Because when you show all that, this variety, this richness of culture on international level, this is giving you back an understanding from people abroad who are not always traveling. They are getting information about a country from the media, but the media very often is giving a very wrong-sided, wrong information about what is happening there. It's not only war. It's not only conflict. It's not only attacks on innocent people in the streets. We have a fantastic reach a culture to experience, and it's ensuring for us to know that you do promote it.
No question, and I think more and more people in the ministry understand today how strong is the power of culture and of the, I would say, the extra activities which are not the political side. Does not mean that we don't have to answer to all the claims and to all the thoughts and things said by journalists and by article writers and by people at the TV about Israel. We should answer about the conflict. We are doing it all the time, both on television and radio and on the papers. But at the same time, we should make an effort to show more culture. Just to give you a little example, how relevant it is. When we opened the Toma Ganihar exhibition at the Gammelstrand Exhibition Hall, one of the first guests to come there with all her entourage was the Queen of Denmark. And she was also present when Liora Grossman, one of the leading Israeli illustrators, received a prize for the illustration she did during a big event that was made here for children, books and illustrations at the beginning of the year. These are just two examples, but quite often the politicians here go to concerts, they go to films, they see films, they're interested in culture. And in such a country where people are interested, no question that the benefit that you get from showing other sides of Israel is huge.
So now coming to this other side of your productive life, because just listening to all the activities you are pushing through and working with, one can be exhausted. But
sorry if you got
exhausted. Yeah, I got nearly exhausted, but and very impressed, of course, and very happy that you're doing it. But I'm coming to ask you, so when do you get the time to be a writer? Because I'm sitting here with your book called in Hebrew "Ksha'aba Yegadol," which means when father will be adult, and it's beautiful, and it's with the illustration of Pepi Marzel. It's like a cartoon book, but it's nice as an adult. I loved reading it, so I say, I ask you, when do you get a time for it?
Well, first of all, I must make little two corrections. First of all, when you say you, of course, it's all the embassy and the foreign ministry. It's not just me promoting culture. I wanted to make sure. And
especially, I'd like to give you the credit.
Say, especially the ambassador we have these days is especially committed to everything that has to do with culture. He goes a lot himself. He does so much to push Israeli culture, and I think it's both a bless for us and it's important for the State of Israel. But I'm not yet a writer, and even if you have two children books, it's the way I see it, of course. It's just a little hobby, or maybe I should say even an accident.
Very nice hobby. Very beautiful hobby.
Thank you. Thank you.
And I'm very glad that you do it. It's giving some pleasure for children, which is very important.
I really hope that I'll be able to make you even happier to tell you that soon the book will come out in Danish. I will give you all the details as soon as will
be
finalized.
Yes.
But until then, what I can tell you is, as you see, the little story is about a father sitting with his son. And the son asks him, "Dad, when you were young, did you know what you were? What you were going to be when you'd be a grown-up or an adult. And then the father, starts up with all the list of things he had in mind, and, you know, big thoughts and big ideas, and each one of the jobs he wanted is either very dangerous or very special or requires a lot of dealing. And the kid here is actually what we call the responsible adult. He's the one to say, well, you know, being a lion tamer, löwe tamer, is it's quite dangerous. You know, maybe that's not the right thing to do. Or when the father says, you know, I wanted to be the world championship in gymnastics, and the kid says, well, you know, world championship in gymnastics mean that you will have to practice all the time. You will not have time to play with me. And so on and so forth, and basically then what I like in this little story is the change of roles in a way, where the father is less the and sometimes in my usual job I don't have the possibility not to be the, you know, adult and look at all the consequences of things that are done. And
is this, that's what I wanted to ask you. Mm-hmm. Is this the playground for you?
You can,
because
in
of
a
your
way,
very
in a way
rigid,
this is in a way this is part of the playground, but it's also I think whoever reads to his kids, I'm sure I've felt it more than once that from time to time you want to tell your own story. And you want to sit with your kid and tell him something of yours, and I do that with my kids. So.
But I know from the book itself that it actually refers to some of your real life dreams too, because beside being a diplomat, you have studied. Well, you better tell it yourself.
Okay.
Your academic background and otherwise also your familiar background.
Well, I would start with this that I'm married to Sharon. I have three kids and they're wonderful kids, and they're here with me in Copenhagen. And the story is about my son, which as if I'm sitting with him and telling him. This, but of course it had parts from the other kids as well, and some of the discussions were between me and my father and not with them, to be honest. But if you are referring to my education, most of it is of course not mentioned at all and not touched upon in the book, and this is my Russian studies and first and second degree and studies of languages, which was a big part of my...
You're fluent in Russian.
Well, I wouldn't say fluent, but I speak and I speak, I read and I understand. But of course, fluent is something, not something I would certainly say. Anyway, of course, we have a translation of the text to Russian as well for sometimes in the future. But getting back to the education, I suppose what you were meaning is to the my gymnastics skills.
Exactly, which is very unusual.
Yes, I suppose so. For many years, I practiced as a gymnast, or should I say, as a foster one, which was not very successful. But certainly one of the...
There is somewhere a very beautiful picture of you jumping in the air with a...
this is, by the way, another...
On the red square.
Yes, not far from the red square. Actually, this is one of the photos made by one of the leading Israeli photographers, Sasha Alekhov. And he participated in Moscow when I was the culture attaché there in a big exhibition of 300 photos from Israel. And 300 photos, actually 150 from Israel and 150 from St. Petersburg, which were shown together. And at the end of this project, I took one or two of the photographers, and we had some fun in the streets of Moscow. And the outcome, one of the outcomes of that was this weird picture of me jumping in a straddle on the background of the Red Square. But might lead you to think that I'm a wonderful gymnast. Unfortunately,
you're very modest.
Unfortunately,
you're too modest, maybe.
It's, thank you.
But it's very nice.
But, unfortunately, I didn't get there, so I needed to write a story about a father that wanted to become the world champion. And just because his son was telling him, you know, it might be dangerous or you won't have time to play with me, he just gave up. But of course, in many ways, you can look at this story from a very different angle and say, well, you know, they're discussing the opportunities of what is important when you choose a job. And in many ways, I think one of the wonderful things of being a diplomat, especially an Israeli diplomat, is that you can really touch so many things, dealing with the arts, dealing with literature, culture, music, but at the same time, you're also dealing with the real, let's call it the real world, with the politics, you're dealing with economics, you're dealing with so many other things that we deal with them at the embassy, and this gives you the possibility to be like this father wanted, in so many different hats, at least for a while.
But it ends up with the father summing up that whatever he wanted and dreamed of, what he really wants to is
being the father of the son that he's telling the story to.
Exactly.
And 1 second before that, of course, they agree that a sleek boutique might be, you know, the solution.
An alternative.
A good alternative. But certainly when just the kid is just about to go back to his, you know, to go to sleep and he yawns already. And then the father says, but you know, there's something I really wanted more than that. And then when the kid is asking, but what, Dad, what could be better than having, you know, having a sleek boutique, which sounds like, you know, the best thing in the world.
Yeah.
So the father is saying, yes, I wanted to be your father. Which is in a way summing up the whole idea of this book, that there are things which are more important in life and others which are even more important.
Which brings me actually, because this shows your, if I may be a little bit nostalgic and a little bit moralizing, which can also be summed up as the responsibility you feel. Continuation of the father role as we knew it from our grandfathers and fathers, and which we feel obliged to go on and build and do the same, at least as good as they did. Which brings me to your familiar background with your grandfather, the Rabbi Luria, which I must tell, I'm very proud to tell, that I remember as a kid or a youngster listening at the Israeli radio to these, or on the TV, to the Bible competitions where people from all over the world would come and demonstrate their fantastic knowledge of the Bible, and your grandfather was sitting there as one of the judges. And I will not forget this, because my whole family was, my mother, my father, and my brother, and we were arguing and we were trying each other's, we were competing among ourselves as well. So you have I will not say an education from it, but anyway, you have a background which sets in relief all the goals you have in life, right?
Well,
you say
I wouldn't of course put it this way, but certainly the fact that my grandfather comes from the research of Bible. He was not a rabbi, but he was a big researcher.
Wrote many
books about the Bible.
Yeah.
By the way, he used to sit without a kippah, without a yarmulke in these events, because he said that the Bible is not just a religious thing, but much more than that. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the
But he's one of the most known
researchers
of the Bible.
He's quite known, especially what he wrote about King David and King Solomon and Saul.
Mm-hmm.
He's more into the side of the archaeology, the connection between the Bible and the archaeology, what was found, where are the places to be found in different moments. If you look today in Israel, where was the Skitopolis, where the Beit An, for example, and other places. At the same time, it is a great pleasure for me to be part of a huge project connected with the Bible, which I found as some kind of my regards to my grandfather in a way. And this is a project which we just started with a Jewish community about a week ago at the Kaolina School on the Day of Independence, where the heads of the community, each one wrote one verse from the Bible in Danish. It's called Folke werden inskriver Bibelen. And whoever writes a verse gets a nice diploma with the signature of many important people. And this idea is that at the end of this process, we will have the whole Bible, the whole Chumash, in handwriting in Danish. We will send it to the Bible Museum in Israel. But during this process, which is happening, by the way, in many, many countries, more than 40, the next place to be that it will start is Odessa, after it started in many, many other places, from London and in Argentina and in Russia and in many, many other places all over the world, in Czech Republic. One of the nicest things that is happening there is using the Bible, using this wonderful project, of course, which is also has a huge exhibition of works of kids on themes from the Bible. At the end of the day, when someone writes a verse, he has the opportunity also to contribute a little sum of money, which goes for the kids of Darfur.
Which is very beautiful. The bridge you make between the Bible and this.
And assisting, yes. I think
beautiful.
Thank you. First of all, I think that's the right way of doing things. When you try to be connected to your past, if you can connect it to something which is important now, where you can assist, I think this is the way people will accept it and will go forward with it and will appreciate the deed. And again, this is an Israeli project that the ministry is promoting all over the world. And just before the end of the year, we had a special event that we arranged here in Copenhagen, where we had the municipality and we had the Red Barnet and we had other organizations. And we took young kids, Muslim, Christians, and Jews together, writing verses from the different texts, but all verses of peace. So everybody was writing. We had Mimi Jakobsen from Red Barnet participating in this event. And of course, people from the different communities were sharing with us this special moment. So the possibilities of a project like this to make a special bridge between different communities and different cultures, but also to show that we are committed to our past, and at the same time we do not forget what is happening now. And we care about what's happening now, and we are ready to contribute when we can. So this combination, I think, is making it special.
Yes, and it is indeed the real, true Jewish way of thinking and working and being a human being, which I'm very happy to give you the opportunity to tell and prove that this is the only way of being a mensch.
Thank you.
So I would like you very much to now read a passage from your book in Hebrew, and it is up to you to choose the chapter you prefer.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I will choose, of course, one of the moments I like especially has to do with the wish of the father to be the world champion in gymnastics, he's telling his son. Maybe I'll start and do the reading, and
please,
hopefully. בערב אחרי הסיפור שלפני השינה שאל תום את אבא, אבא תגיד, שהיית קטן ידעת מה תהיה כשתגדל? אבא חשב רגע וענה, בטח שידעתי. ומה רצית? שאל תום. היו המון דברים שרציתי, אמר אבא. כמו מה? שאל תום. למשל, אלוף העולם בהתעמלות, אמר אבא. אלוף העולם בהתעמלות? שאל תום. אם היית אלוף העולם בהתעמלות, בטח הייתה לך מדליית זהב, ואני הייתי עונד אותה, ולא הייתי מסיר אותה, אפילו כשהייתי שוכב לישון. אבל אבא, זה טוב מאוד שוויתרת על זה. כי אם היית אלוף העולם בהתעמלות, היית צריך כל הזמן להתאמן, ולא היה לך זמן לשחק איתי. So, as you can see, sometimes you have to compromise. And whenever I go to the place where I do gymnastics here in Copenhagen, and I will not tell you where, then, of course, I tell myself, you're not a world champion in gymnastics. Well, because, you have a family, you have a work at the embassy, and so I have my, explanation.
And you
for
are
myself.
Writing books.
And I'm writing books and dealing with the Bible Project and many other things.
It was very nice listening and having you here. And the Radio Shalom, it's, as I said, it's an honor, it's a pleasure. And whenever there is a new book, please come and tell us about it. Will you promise me?
I will. It's an honor and pleasure for me to be here.
Thank you very much, Dan Oyan. Thank you.
Al ha'pri shelo hirshi lo deshemel Vores næste indslag handler om den israelske koreograf Adi Salant, som for tiden arbejder som koreograf for dansk danseteater. Hun er blevet inviteret af Tim Rushton, du producerer og laver koreografi og i sendesætte en del af en forestilling, som hedder Spring Dance. Den del, som Adi arbejder med, hedder Line a Star. Like a Star. Adi har været i Danmark de sidste 5 år. Hun arbejder som freelance, og hun har stadigvæk tilknytning til den israelske Betseva kompagni, som er en af de mest berømte israelske danseteater. Hun iscenesætter og instruerer specielt stykker af den israelske koreograf, som hedder Ohad Naharin, som er en meget berømt kunstner i Israel og worldwide. Og her er hun så blevet inviteret til Danmark for at for at arbejde med det. Adi har arbejdet i 12 år i Bador Danseskole. Hun studerede i Bador Danseskole og arbejdede i 7 år for Betseva Ensemble, 5 år som for ungdomsensemble, og 7 år. 2 år i ungdomsensemble og 5 år i hovedensemble. Og Adi taler ikke dansk, så vi går over til engelsk og håber, at vores lytter forstår og kan følge med. Adi, I have introduced you to the listeners of Radio Shalom, like a short presentation. And I would like you to tell a little about what brought you to Denmark and what you're working with for the time being.
So what brought me to Denmark, it's actually a person, it's Hum, which is my boyfriend. He was dancing in Betseva Dance Company in Israel. He's Danish, his name is Jesper. And after leaving the company, we decided to live here for a while. And so we moved in here, and we've been living here since, and recently had our first girl. So this is the reason, my boyfriend.
Yes. Congratulations.
Thank you.
What kind of ballet are you dancing? Could you describe it to the listeners who cannot see? We have seen a rehearsal of a modern dancing, but maybe you could explain something about what kind of dance theater you're working with.
So, as a student, I danced I danced classical and jazz and ballet, but very fast it was clear to me. I was very drawn to the modern dance, to the contemporary dance. And then I joined the Ensemble Bacheva, which is led by Ohad Naharin, and is a very famous and well-known choreographer, and been honored many times for many awards as a for choreographing. And so Bacheva Company is a modern company, and I think for me the difference, let's say, from ballet, that you have less limitations and rules that that you can more explore and challenge the audience, actually, to open their mind more. So it's not a certain story like Swan Lake or Sleeping Beauty, you know. It can be more abstract and led more by emotions and feelings, and this is what also I'm trying in my choreographies to present to the audience, a picture which cannot be interpreted only in one certain, you know, idea. You can take it to your own experience, and the one next to you will conceive it completely different, but you will share some feelings, and I will provoke some feelings inside you. So this is what I'm trying to do, and I think this is what also a bit modern dance is about.
This particular performance, Like a Star, does it bring any ideas about what it is about in terms of I don't know, is it poetic, is it dramatic, is there a story or is there no story, is it what can you tell if somebody wants to say, okay, what kind of performance is it, a comic performance, is it well, what can you tell us about it, why do we want to come and see you?
Well, I it's very much about the mass of people, this performance for me. The influence of being inside a group, and the energy that you're getting from being inside a group, and also what it's doing for you as individual while you are part of a mass, of a community, it's actually was very interesting for me, this process, because I'm in a new period in my life as a mother, and I had just now a great experience and very exciting experience. So I think you can see it in the piece that it's about life and celebration of life, and just to enjoying being together and express ourselves without boundaries almost, and have the shoulder of one each, and you know, one to have the shoulders of our companions to rely on, and so I think it's very energetic, actually, and inviting, and yeah, peace. So yeah.
Do you work with the Danish dancers mainly in this performance?
Well, actually, this company contains some Danish and some non-Danish. Most of them are non-Danish, okay. If I will say the truth. So, and this is also what is interesting, I think, in ballet companies all over, that it's a mixture. So, and it's coming out on stage. You have different cultures and different backgrounds. That so you can really see it, even though they can do the same movement, but how you move, it's already inside you from wherever you came and what is your background, and this is what makes a company more layered and more fascinating, I think, to see. So,
you have experience in working in a dancing company in Israel and in Denmark. Do you experience any cultural difference in the way that people are communicating and people they're working in work discipline, creativity, self-discipline?
The thing is, dancers are kind of a subculture. You know, we are speaking kind of the same language, body language, but of course there are some differences, and it's the background is also, Denmark and Israel are different, you know, and so you can sense it, of course, but also my background, I think because of Ohad Naharin, is very much influenced the dance scene in Israel and very much developed the dance scene there, and you can feel a bit the different, more maybe with students than with professional dancers, but I feel very much connected to them. So there is something there that you cannot explain, that there is, you sense the difference, but overall you connect very much because you've been through the same path of being a professional dancer, and so there's very, a lot of similarities also.
While you've been in Israel, you've been a dancer and you've been member of an ensemble. When you came to Denmark, your role has changed and you're a choreographer and instructor. How do you like the new role in your life of being directing other people?
I like it. I enjoy sharing my knowledge when I'm teaching, and to look with the group in front of me to give them more tools to improve and to show them maybe a different approach to a movement, and suggest some others' inputs that they maybe that I have with me coming from Israel and my background. I enjoy very much also choreograph and to explore this field now and to find my own voice and my own style, and so I'm really grateful for this opportunity to work with really such a great and professional dancers, so it's good.
Can you say something about your plans for the future? What would you like to do? What are your dreams and what are your plans?
I would like to continue with choreographing very much. I also enjoy very much to teach. I really enjoyed this meeting and with the one-on-one with dancers. I also thinking of going back to Israel to live there again, and but this relationship with Denmark will always be there, and
Have you seen some of the Danish ballet tradition, like Bournonville and the Danish classical ballet? It's much more disciplined and well organized and traditional. Does it have any influence on your way of seeing the body movements and the body language and sort of a way of communication connected to the culture?
I've seen, of course, performances. It is dense, and so there is a lot of meeting points, you know, even if it's on, if it's classical ballet or modern, we still have the relationship of music and structure on the stage, and the bass is always ballet in a way. So I'm sure, you know, it's kind of influencing, it's in the subconscious, you have this technique more coming out, even though I'm more thinking of breaking out of it. Use your technique, though, in a different way. Not so much shapes, but more energy and power, and take yourself. I think ballet, it's very much being on balance, you know, on point, and not to shake so much. And I like to explore the off balance, and you know, so this is maybe the difference.
Well, as I see, the modern ballet is like a way of communication. It is said that 70% of all communication is body language. So the modern ballet takes the rest of the 30% and uses the 70% language to fulfill the communication together with music. And I find it very interesting. How do you like Danish ballet scene? There is, I mean, it's a little country, and we have quite a lot of dance companies, and there is dance theater and different stages. How do you find it?
Yeah. I think there are many things happening here, and but if people will open themselves a bit more for the contemporary dance scene, I think it's quite suffering, and there's no much audience, actually. So maybe because of the tradition of the Royal Ballet, and it's so some in the roots of this country, it's a bit taking, like making a shade over the modern scene, because also people, like you're saying, what is it about? Why I should come? Because it's, people know, okay, I'm going to see Romeo and Juliet. So it's Romeo and Juliet. There's no much surprises, and, you know, everything will be nice and beautiful. And I think people, if I may invite everybody to challenge themselves to try to see something else, and maybe be provoked, and just to open the mind and sit in the audience and see what they're receiving, and because it, maybe it's not a story that we all know, but the sensations that going out from the dancers to the audience are very strong, and it's a very, I think, strong communication between dancers, and they're really exposing themselves on stage. Exposing in them, meaning that they are opening themselves and expressing their deepest feelings, you know, and they're not trying to portray something nice always and beautiful, and, you know, the prince and the princess. It's also other stuff, and I wish, and it's starting though, and I wish even more the contemporary scene could grow and have more, a bigger platform in the whole dancing, because for now I think it's more ruled by the royal world. So, yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much, Adi. And as a great fan of modern dance, I can assure that everyone will enjoy the great energy and humor and surprise of a modern ballet.
Yes, thank you.
Ja, det var det, hvad vi havde i dag på vores program. I lyttede til Radio Shalom, og jeg vil gerne sige tak til vores gæster her i studiet, Hanna Ziade og Dan Orian. Jeg vil også gerne sige tak til Marcel Julzari ved teknikken, som hjalp mig her igennem programmet. Mit navn er Miriam Schechter, jeg var jeres vært i dag. Tak fordi I lyttede med. dag, de lytter til Radio Shalom. Radio Shalom sender alt om jødisk kultur, religion og historie, herunder os, Israel. Mit navn er Miriam Schechter, og jeg er jeres vært i dag. Og i studiet har jeg Marcel Julzari til at hjælpe mig med teknikken. Udover israelsk musik, så har vi selvfølgelig to interessante gæster i studiet i dag. Den ene er Hanna Siade, som er her i studiet i anledning, eller på grund af en kronik, han har skrevet i Politiken, under navnet Requiem for Arabiens jøder. Det er hans besøg i Yemen og hos de yemenitiske jøder, og de erfaringer, han har høstet der, og hvad han har set, som han vil fortælle i studiet i dag om. Og den anden gæst er den israelske viceambassadør og børnebogsforfatter Dan Orian. Dan Orian vil fortælle om sin virke som diplomat og om sit forfatterskab som børnebogsforfatter. Radio Shalom sender hver dag mellem 18.30 og 20. Hver søndag 16-20 er det på hebraisk, og hver tredje onsdag i en måned er det på jiddisch. Vi genudsender hver lørdag 22-24 og hver søndag mellem 10 og 12. Vi er altid glade for at høre jeres mening om vores udsendelser, og I er velkommen at ringe til os på 35 85 86 11. Jeg gentager 35 85 86 11. I kan finde os på nettet på www.radioshalom.dk, og I kan sende os en mail på info@radioshalom.dk.
אחד בדרך לבאר שבע הרוח מן הים את השיחים ליטף ליד אילן זקן היא את ראשה הסבה וצמתה ירדה ירוד מן הכתף הגדוד המשיך לצעוק ועם הגדוד הלכו ואת פניו נשקו גם רוח גם חמה אבל בחניה לילית אחת נוכחו כי שכח לשאול אותה לשמע לא ידע את שמע אבל אותה צמא הלכה עמו לאורך כל הדרך והוא ידע יש יום בו ייפגשו פתאום עם שחר של טללים או שמש ערך הקיץ השני החליף גוונים וצבע פטרול סיור חזר מלילה של סיוון ניהר האמבולנס בדרך לבאר שבע והיא חיכתה לו בחלוק לבן והוא שאל האם
והיא אמרה זוכרת וכה דיברו שעות איש לא ידע על מה וכשהלך בלי שוב והיא נותרה חילרת זכרה היא כי שכח לשאול אותה לשמה לא ידע את שמה אבל אותה צמה הלכה עמו לאורך כל הדרך והוא ידע יש יום בו ייפגשו פתאום עם שחר של טללים או שמש
שרד לים רוח רוח קל יהום מי חולם חולם עלייך במשלט משלט הערות שיות בליל 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 רומזים רומזים פתאום בסלעים סלעים והר עץ בודד בודד ינום מי הולך הולך אלייך עם ערוב ערוב היום שניות בליל 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 בלי רומזים רומזים פתאום מה אומרות עינייך 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 בלי לומר עד תום עד תום בוקר בוקר את יאור ואשוב אשוב מלחוב האמצע אמצע עדיין זכר זכר לחלום שניות בליל בליל בלי רומזים רומזים פתאום מה אומרות עינייך 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 בלי לומר עד תום עד תום בלי לומר עד תום עד תום
Hanna Siade, velkommen til Radio Shaloms studie.
Tak, tak.
Jeg er meget glad for at have dig i studiet her i dag. Og anledningen og baggrund for, at jeg ønskede dig i studiet, det var din kronik i Politikken, som kom den 28. februar i år, og som hedder Requiem for Arabiens jøder. Mm. Og der fortæller du om dit besøg i Yemen, og din oplevelse med den jødiske samfund, som består af ganske få jøder efterhånden, tilbage i Yemen. Og du fortæller om den undertrykkelse, de er udsat for. Din artikel har gjort meget stor indtryk på mig. Den har givet mig for det første viden og informationer, som jeg ikke havde kendskab til. Og den har vist mig, at du er et menneske med et pluralistisk syn på tilværelsen. Jeg blev meget betaget af den måde, du har skrevet det på. Dels redegør du for jødernes situation i Yemen, men du kommer i slutningen af din kronik også ind på et polemik, som jeg vil meget gerne have med i vores interview i dag. Og derfor så var det meget vigtigt for mig, at andre og mange lyttede til din historie og din beretning, for den er vigtigt.
Jamen, tak skal du have. Jeg er også meget, meget, meget glad for, at nogen tog os den her kronik op, fordi der er behov for, at nogen gør noget.
Så velkommen igen.
Tak.
Du har været der, men først, hvad er din baggrund?
Ja, altså jeg er jo født og vokset op i Libanon. Det er snart 44 år siden. Og min far er født og vokset op i Jerusalem og flygtet til Jordan og derfra til Libanon. Og jeg kom til Danmark i 86, også som flytning, så jeg er sådan set anden generations flytning.
Ja.
Ikke anden generations indvandrer. Og jeg var i Yemen, fordi jeg arbejdede med Dansk Institut for Menneskerettigheder og var udstationeret der. Danmark har et program, hvor vi skal støtte om menneskerettigheder i Yemen. Og der mødte jeg så, jeg rejste meget i landet, og der mødte jeg den sidste jødiske menighed, eller lille samfund, i en by uden for Sanaa, der hedder...
Inden du kommer ind på det, så synes jeg, det er vigtigt, at lytterne forstår, hvorfor du har så stor en interesse for netop menneskerettighedsproblematikken. Du har en akademisk baggrund.
Ja, jeg skriver jo også på en PhD om menneskerettigheder i Mellemøsten.
Du er magister i arabisk.
Jeg har også kendt med i arabisk og arabisk studie, samfundsfaglig studie og i fransk litteratur fra Københavns Universitet, og skriver jeg nu på en PhD på Roskilde Universitet om menneskerettigheder i Mellemøsten. Men min interesse i det er jo, altså mit arbejde for instituttet behøvede ikke at handle om jøderne i Yemen. Selvfølgelig skulle det også handle om
det. Var det så helt tilfældigt, du kom
forbi? Det var personligt, fordi jeg har altid interesseret mig for mangfoldighed. Jeg har arbejdet jo igennem mange, mange år og her i Danmark med mangfoldighedsledelse og med ligestilling, og hvor jeg altid bare de der store flag og sagde, at det er vigtigt, at vi har indvandrere og muslimer og araber, fordi det giver et samfund en mangfoldighed. Så, og jeg har en interesse for gammel kultur. Og så selvfølgelig, når man er i Yemen, så har man, hvis man er dannet, så har man jo hørt om, at det har været en gammel jødisk kultur der. Og der, ligesom jeg har opsøgt ismaeliterne og alle mulige andre sådan